The never-ending story of Brexit. People turned out in record numbers in the United Kingdom to vote to leave. Yes, they said. 2 years later, they wonder, is Westminster listening at all?
Turn around, look at what you see.
If you look at any news service on the net, television, listen on radio, you can't avoid hearing about Brexit. And if you're like me and think, just get on with it or stop it, one or the other, we're sick of this. Imagine if you lived in the UK, how sick to death you would be of it. And then the other day, I saw a story that exemplified why some people think Brexit's a great idea. And it was the story of Penka the cow. Penka's a bit of an idiot. She wandered across the border. You see, borders aren't burned into the soil. She spent a couple of weeks down the road, and then the authorities said she couldn't come home. And one wonders whether people realise that birds and rodents and worms and squirrels and a whole range of animals cross borders every day. I mean, they're just insane. But anyway, I know who to talk to about Brexit, and that's Brendan O'Neill from Spiked Online. Brendan, welcome back to Counterpoint.
Hi, Amanda.
Now, what is going on with this Brexit stuff?
Well, as you say, Penka the cow kind of sums up why a lot of us, including me, voted for Brexit, which is that the European Union has become this insanely bureaucratic institution which thinks in a very strange way about pretty much every issue under the sun. So the fact that Penka the cow was virtually given this death sentence simply for wandering outside of the European Union sums up the problem that we face. And thankfully, thanks to petitions launched by ordinary people, that death sentence was reversed and Penka lives to see another day. And so some of us like the idea of Brexit for those kinds of reasons, because we don't like bureaucracy, but it's really being put through the ringer. And Theresa May and her government are not doing a good job of seeing it through. Partly it's understandable why they're not doing a good job. They're under attack from pretty much every wing of British politics who don't really want to see Brexit happen. They're under severe pressure from the European Union, which is far better at negotiating than we are, it seems. And Theresa May's own party is incredibly divided over Brexit between Remainers and Brexiteers, which means Theresa May, just to give her a little bit of due, balancing probably the most difficult political process in the Western world right now. And sadly, she's not doing a particularly good job of it.
Could anyone do a good job of it?
Well, that's, I guess, the million-dollar question, whether this is a failing because Theresa May isn't up for the job or whether Brexit is so big and so controversial that anyone would find it difficult. But the process that we're currently in is that Brexit is to-ing and fro-ing between the House of Lords and the House of Commons. And in the Lords, which is our unelected second chamber, made up of largely appointed do-gooders and the great and the good, the House of Lords is pretty much anti-Brexit. They're very concerned about it. They're very disappointed with us ordinary people, the 17.4 million who voted for Brexit, which, by the way, is the largest number of people in British history who have ever voted for anything. They don't like it, so they keep adding amendments to Theresa May's Brexit bill and changing what Theresa May is planning to do. So these amendments are going back and forth between the Lords and the Commons. Last week, the Commons rejected the Lords' amendments, but this week the Lords are adding more amendments and really trying to water down the Brexit bill so that, in essence, we don't leave the EU in a meaningful way. So that's where we're at the moment. And it's kind of really opening some interesting questions in Britain. There are now even articles in The Telegraph, and The Telegraph is our kind of rather stuffy, pro-Tory, pro-tradition newspaper. There's an article in The Telegraph recently saying, maybe it's time to get rid of the House of Lords. Maybe it's time that we didn't have this unelected second chamber, which for some reason has got the power to hold up the largest vote in British history. So a lot of interesting questions, not only about our relationship with the EU, but how we do politics in Britain itself, are bursting to the surface as a consequence of Brexit.
Yeah, we have that similar question in Australia with our Senate, which is configured in a very weird fashion at the moment, partly because of people who are or feel disenfranchised, annoyed with the major parties, and they vote for minors and independents who, you know, haven't thought twice really about what they want to say next week, yeah. let alone in 2 years. And yeah. it's all sort of collapsing. And so it's setting itself up a bit like a second and equal chamber rather than a House of Review. And that does lead to problems with how your democracy is meant to work. Now, our Senate is not the same as your House of Lords, I get that. But I did hear you say that it's made up of people who largely don't like the way 17 million English people voted. Well, tough luck. They're not there to be a House of Review on the English people and their voting pattern, are they?
Well, exactly. That's right. The thing is that, you know, the House of Lords is kind of skating on thin ice because the House of Lords has been involved in controversies before. In the early 20th century, they refused to push through the Liberal Party's so-called people's budget. They didn't like the people's budget, so they blocked it in the House of Lords. And as a consequence of that, the Commons brought in some really tough legislation which put the Lords in their place and really dramatically weakened their power. That was 100 years ago, and it looks like the Lords haven't learnt their lesson because the power that they were left with after that controversy, they're now using to try and weaken something that 17.4 million people voted for and which a government which just last year was voted in with more than 13 million votes, that government has written a bill to try and make this thing called Brexit happen, and they're also interfering with that bill. And this is 650 people in the second chamber who have never been voted for by anyone, who've never won a single vote for their seats in that house. And a lot of people around the country, even people who are not particularly radical, including people like my mother, are now saying things like, why do we have this chamber? What's the point of it? And is it time to do something different? So that's one of the things that I like about Brexit, in fact, which is that it's brought all these unresolved questions from history back to life. Questions about who has political authority and should parliamentary democracy be more important than direct democracy and what's the role of the Lords? And all these questions that have been bubbling up in British and English society really since the Civil War of the 1640s have kind of exploded back into public life as a consequence of Brexit. And my view is that when so many people make a clear democratic choice, it really is incumbent upon politicians to ensure that that happens. And if they fail, I think people's trust in democracy is going to take a real beating.
I'm talking with Brendan O'Neill from Spiked Online about Brexit. Brendan, it's a fair point about the House of Lords people never being elected. And in a completely different context from my past, I do understand the way people who have been elected, because that can be a sort of bruising process, and it's certainly an educational process, getting elected, feel when someone who's never been elected, never put themselves out there to mix with people who they generally regard as the great unwash, comes and announces what ought to be the case from first principles and does so in a way that effectively says, I don't care what they think. A bit like Hillary Clinton and her deplorables. You don't care what they think. But that, of course, underlies the basic foundation of politics and of democracy in particular, and that is that each person has a say and a right to have a say.
That's exactly right. And that's one of the sticking points with what's happening with Brexit at the moment, which it strikes a lot of us that there are people out there who are essentially saying that their vote should count for more than ours. So when members of parliament, the latest thing they're agitating for is a meaningful vote on the Brexit deal, which basically means that they would have the right in parliament to say yay or nay to Brexit itself. That's essentially what we're talking about. And to a lot of people out there, and I've heard people say this, and I've heard people argue this on street corners and in newspaper columns and so on, that looks to us like members of parliament and other influential people saying that they should have more votes than us on the question of Brexit and the question of Britain's relationship with the EU. The same with very wealthy businessmen, Richard Branson being one, or very wealthy former politicians like Tony Blair, who are setting up these pro-Remain groups and using their economic and political clout to try and water down or kill off Brexit. It looks to a lot of people like it's seriously anti-democratic because, as you say, the great thing about democracy is at that moment when you're choosing either your political representative or the course of action for your country, everyone is equal. We all have equal power at that moment. And if Brexit gets overturned or if it gets weakened or watered down by these influential, wealthy, rather cut off people, then that whole process will be called into question. And I think that's going to cause more controversy and conflict than politicians currently realise.
And build up resentment, yeah. Do you recall the situation in Ireland? I remember meeting an Irish minister who said they had a vote on whether to do something in relation to the EU, and they voted no.
Yes.
The first time. And she said, oh, we're having another referendum. And I said, well, hold on, have you just had one? And she said, yes, but we gave the wrong answer, and we all know we did. Now, I think it was a bit more complicated than that, but that was her line at the time. But that does beg the question, would it be a sensible move for those who feel Brexit is just too big and too hard to have another vote, to go back and say, there's a lot of uncertainty here, there's a lot of angst, and if you feel the same way, vote the same way, but we're just going to not second guess you, but ask you to confirm or otherwise your decision. And we now know this is what it means if you say yes, and this is what it means if you say no.
Yeah, a lot of people are making that argument. And in fact, on the second anniversary of the Brexit vote, which is on the 23rd of June this month.
2 years ago.
Yes, so then there's going to be a large gathering in London of Remainers. You know, Britain is now largely split between Brexiteers and Remainers, like Roundheads versus Cavaliers, I guess. And there's going to be a large demonstration calling for a second referendum. I'm really opposed to the second referendum, and the Irish example is actually a good reason why. You know, the Irish voted against the Nice Treaty in 2001, which would have expanded the European Union's powers, and they voted against the Lisbon Treaty in 2008, which actually gave rise to the EU as we understand it now, which is a fairly powerful, increasingly bureaucratic body. The Irish rejected the Lisbon Treaty, and they got so much abuse, so much flak. They were called ungrateful. The EU looked down their noses on the Irish in this really quite grotesque way. And they were made to vote again the next year under severe pressure, including threats that the economic assistance the EU gives to Ireland will be withdrawn, that people would suffer as a consequence. And in those conditions, turnout was quite low, and people voted by a small majority in favour of Lisbon the second time round. So it wasn't what you would call a nice, fair, free vote. And more importantly, the result of the first Irish vote against the Lisbon Treaty wasn't fully respected or enacted before they were rushed into a second referendum. And my concern with Brexit is that a second referendum would do the exact same thing, which is that we would be asking people to vote again before the thing that they voted for first time round had actually happened or been seriously attempted. And I think if 17.4 million people vote to end Britain's relationship with the European Union, then that does need to be respected. Now, if we revisit the question in 10 or 20 years' time, or maybe 40 years' time, which is the gap between our vote to enter the EEC in the 1970s and then our vote to leave the EU in 2016, I'm not saying we shouldn't revisit it, but I think firstly it has to happen.
A clear no to the prospect of saying whether it's a good idea. You think, no, it's definitely not. Go back and say, do you want a chance to rethink this? Or we think you need a chance to rethink it. You can have another vote. So that's a no.
Yes. I think it's presented to us as another chance of democracy, as giving us more choice and more democracy. But to me, it looks a bit like the double jeopardy thing in law, where, you know, someone is found innocent of a crime, and yet you put him on trial again and again and again until you get the right result. And, you know, most democratic, civilized societies don't like putting someone on trial again and again for the same offence. And I think that's really what they're asking for in relation to Brexit. They just want to keep pushing us and putting pressure on us until we give what they think is the right answer. But, you know, ordinary people in this country think they've already given the right answer. And in fact, every poll shows that there are very small shifts in people's views on this matter. Very small numbers of Leavers have changed their minds. Very small numbers of Remainers have changed their minds. People are sticking with what they voted for 2 years ago, and they're expecting it to happen. And I think if it doesn't happen, or if we're forced to vote again, the real problem with this is that people's faith in politics itself will be called into question. And we have to remember that in the referendum in 2016, the turnout was 72%, which is high for Britain. Some people who hadn't voted for decades came out to vote because they finally thought that they weren't just choosing between what they considered to be similar parties, but instead were making a really big, important decision. They felt empowered.
Mm.
All those people will be told, if we undermine this or have a second vote, a rushed second vote, they will be told, actually, we don't take you very seriously. And I think that would be devastating for British democracy for a generation.
I'm not sure I agree, simply because you are going back and asking again, but I'm not there. And frankly, Brendan, as soon as you said, go back and keep asking the same question till you get the same answer, I thought, oh no, that's what my husband does to me. Until I finally say, all right, whatever you want. And it's very annoying. So I think the English public would be very annoyed to have a second vote. Brendan O'Neill, thanks for joining us again from London.
Thanks, Amanda.